The health sector is about to fail, imminently failure. I don't know how we will deal with a huge number of wounded people. Now we're receiving maybe more than 3,000 wounded patients. Our hospital, in normal days, the maximum capacity is 700 beds. Some severely injured patients stay in the emergency department waiting for surgical interference. But we don't have places in this time. Unfortunately, most of the wounded patients are civilian people, children and female patients. We work under severe pressure. We have very limitation of medical equipment. Even MSF opened their stores to be used from Minister of Health here in Gaza. Of course, no electricity available. This is unknown actually how the amount of gasoline they have. It's a matter of time. No safe places outside. We have here in the hospital more than 40,000 civilian people who come to the hospital seeking for some safety. Israel army asked from all the hospital in Gaza to be evacuated. This order is not sensible because more than 3,000 of wounded patients we cannot evacuate to any place.
Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. What you just heard was a clip, an audio clip from Dr. Nadal Abed, an orthopedic surgeon with MSF, Doctors Without Borders, which was sent yesterday from Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. Now, the conflict between Israel and Gaza has now entered its 13th day. Joining me on the show today to discuss the developments so far is Dr. Muslim Imran. He's founding director of the KL-based Asia Middle East Center for Research and Dialogue. Muslim, thank you so much for being on the show with me today. I appreciate your time. Now, I want to begin our conversation with a look at the most recent developments. I mean, as at of the time that we are recording this, we have trucks carrying aid and relief workers on the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing, waiting to be for the border to be reopened, for supplies to be allowed into Gaza. We haven't had any news yet of when the reopening will happen, but in the meantime, Gaza remains under siege. So I do wonder, though, whether the fact that we have the border crossing reopening imminent, do you think this could be the beginning of a potential ceasefire to allow for a corridor of humanitarian aid?
Thank you, Melissa, for having me on board. I believe that a ceasefire will eventually come. The problem is that the Israeli government is very desperate to get an image of victory. So they are trying to inflict as much damage on civilians in Gaza as possible. And that's why they have been postponing the ceasefire. There was an effort in the United Nations Security Council, which unfortunately was shut down by the Americans. But the international pressure on Israel is mounting. What they've been doing in Gaza is not helping undermine the will of the people of Gaza. It's not undermining Hamas' preparedness to counter back any Israeli military attack. It's only hurting Israel's image. It's actually exposing Israel for the war criminal it is. So eventually a ceasefire will probably be reached, but the question is when? The Americans, for the last few days, have tried very hard to secure some political gains for Israel without Israel going for a ground invasion. Apparently, their efforts weren't fruitful. They pressured many Arab countries. None was willing to give in. And eventually, Blinken and President Biden themselves have come back to Israel to give the bad news to Prime Minister Netanyahu that you have to think of other options. Now, one of the options on the ground is a ground invasion, but going for a ground invasion means that not only the Palestinian civilians will be affected, but also Israel's military will be affected. It was unable to handle a bunch of fighters on the 7th of October inside Israeli military bases. How would it be able to go and handle tens of thousands of Palestinian freedom fighters inside their homes in Gaza? What is happening now, I think, is total madness from the Israeli side. No military strategy, no political strategy. total embarrassment, pressure from within, and now, because of their war crimes, pressure from the outside.
All right. So I think the intention for a ground invasion, the Israeli Defense Minister is still quite adamant that ground troops will be sent into Gaza. No mention yet as to when that might happen. But as you said, you know, that the strategy is yet unclear. But we know what Israel's stated objectives are, which is to end Hamas rule in Gaza. But what is the military or political exit strategy? Would it be to retake Gaza, reoccupy Gaza, invade Gaza, or leave Gaza as an unoccupied space? What do you think is Israel's endgame for Gaza?
You see, Israel has been a major military power in the Middle East for decades, probably since the 1967 war. So they tried to take on Hamas in the war of 2008-2009. It was a big failure. And their declared objective was actually to eradicate, to annihilate Hamas from Gaza. They wanted to take Hamas out. Over 3 weeks of fighting resulted in Israel pulling out without any political gains. They tried again in the year 2014. They went for a ground invasion. It was a very bloody war. Of course, Israel has inflicted a lot of pain on the Palestinians by killing civilians. But when it came to battle, to military encounters, man-to-man, Israel's army failed miserably in the 2014 war. Some of their soldiers were even captured during military action in Gaza, and they continue to be captured until today. So repeating the same thing again and again, when it never worked, when you were a powerful military power, how is it going to work now? When 10 or 15 years later, Hamas, the Palestinian resistance, is way more prepared to take on Israel. If you were unable to handle, as I mentioned, 1,200 fighters in your own military bases, how are you going to handle hundreds or probably thousands of soldiers all over the Gaza Strip who are fighting from their own homes? Of course, not fighting from their homes because they're hiding there, but they are living in the Gaza city. You are actually going to go for a big risky endeavor, which I don't think any sane Israeli military leader will consider to be an option. And I'm sure there is an ongoing rift within the Israeli establishment between the political leadership and the military leadership.
Yeah, thank you for reminding us about the previous escalations of violence that have happened. I want to ask you about that. Based on history, what do we know about what might, you know, trigger a ceasefire this time around? There was varying periods of violence in 2009 and 2014 and even in 2021. What might determine the length and depth and scale of the current escalation of violence, and what could trigger a ceasefire now?
I want to draw your attention to some figures that Bassem Youssef, in an interview with Piers Morgan, has shown a few days ago. Everybody can Google it. It's very viral now. He showed the number of casualties on both the Palestinian side and the Israeli side. Of course, the proportion was always stark difference between the number of Palestinian casualties and Israeli casualties. For instance, in the 2014 war on Gaza, the ratio was 1 to 27. So for every 27 Palestinians, one Israeli was killed or injured. Israel continues to repeat the same mistake. They go on offensive, they strike from air, from land and sea. Sometimes they try ground invasion. Sometimes they try heavy bombardment. But the end result is the same. They are avoiding to address the root cause of the problem. The root cause of the problem is occupation. As long as you are occupying the Palestinian land and the policy of disposition, as long as you are persecuting the Palestinian people, stealing their land, forcing them out of their land, of course, Palestinians will come back. They will always make a comeback. History did not start on the 7th of October. There are Palestinians in the West Bank who are being shot at as we speak and who have been under military occupation and are subject to extrajudicial killing and other apartheid policies for many years. And Hamas doesn't rule the West Bank. For the last 10 months, Israel has killed 250 people in the West Bank, mostly children. Most of them are children. So Palestinians will make a comeback. They are subject to all sorts of oppression, so they are resisting back. That's why I think what Israel is considering now is a fatal mistake. It's just a repetition of the same mistake. We say in Arabic, اللي بيجرب اللي مجرب بيكون عقله مخرب. If you try the same thing again and again, you have a problem here in your brain. Israel has to really consider other options. Other options mean addressing Palestinian problems, the injustice that is being inflicted on the Palestinians.
Well, what options do the Palestinians have then? What choices do Palestinians have on the table right now?
Well, we can look at two different methodologies or approaches adopted by different Palestinian factions. We have one in the West Bank adopted by President Mahmoud Abbas, which is opting to negotiate a peaceful settlement. He's avoiding any sort of resistance to Israeli occupation, no armed resistance, not even popular resistance. He's negotiating. He always has been inviting them to the negotiating table. But since the year 2014, neither the Israelis nor the Americans have been interested in any sort of negotiations with President Abbas. So this is one option. The Palestinians have been trying it since 1991, the Madrid conference, and since the 1993 Oslo Accord. It still actually goes on. The attempts still go on. But the end result is a big zero. More settlements in the West Bank. The number of Israeli settlers, illegal settlers in the West Bank has doubled like never before. More land stealing. Al-Aqsa Mosque is being desecrated. Plans to divide Al-Aqsa Mosque are actually in action. The extrajudicial killing in the West Bank still takes place. Ethnic cleansing in Hawara still takes place under full government support. The Israeli minister publicly declared that we have to wipe Hawara out of the map. So this is one approach, and this is the consequence. On the other side, we see Palestinians, not only in Gaza, but in many other parts of Palestine, even in the West Bank, in Jenin camp and in Nablus, trying other options, trying to pressure Israel, trying to have some bargaining chips, trying to use other approaches. And I'm very confident that the Palestinians have the moral high grounds to try all options, because they are being occupied. They are being persecuted against. If they want to go for peace, the doors are shut and they are shot at. If they want to go for armed resistance or any other sort of resistance, the international community will frown upon them. So what does the international community want from the Palestinians?
Okay, having said that, Muslim, can you help me understand? Is the liberation of Palestine synonymous with the destruction of the State of Israel? How can you clarify the distinction between the two from a Palestinian context, from a Hamas perspective, and whether the Palestinian context and the Hamas perspective is actually one and the same?
You see, the way that media sometimes frames terms like destruction of Israel sounds very scary, actually. But you look at the collapse of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s.
I actually got that from the charter of Hamas on their website. So it was a copy and paste. That's the exact words that were used.
Okay. That charter, of course, Hamas has moved on from that charter. There was a political document that was published in 2017. But anyway, the Soviet Union collapsed in the early 1990s. Without bloodshed, it was a peaceful, change of system. Of course, Yugoslavia was disintegrated in a more, bitter way. But the point is, there is a possibility of a change of system, whether with bloodshed or without bloodshed. We Palestinians would rather have a change of system without any bloodshed. Look at South Africa, for instance. The apartheid system that existed in South Africa for decades was dismantled. It was destroyed, if I may use the term destroyed. So Israel can actually be dismantled as an apartheid regime. There is no problem in that. In fact, that is what human rights groups like Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Israeli human rights groups like B'Tselem are saying. We have to dismantle apartheid. We have to disintegrate this system of dispossession and oppression. So that's actually what Hamas is doing. I mean, interestingly, Hamas is aspiring for the same thing that Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International are aspiring for, but in different means.
Is there a distinction between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism from the perspective of the Palestinian, of Palestinians and this perspective of Hamas?
Yes, most certainly. Palestinians have never been anti-Semitic. Palestinians are Semitic in the first place. Palestinians have always welcomed different faiths in Palestine. In fact, since Islamic rule in, started in Palestine in the time of Caliph Omar al-Khattab in the 7th century, all the way until today, the Palestinian nation has welcomed different faiths and streams in our society. It was, you know, other empires that persecuted and ethnically cleansed other communities. For instance, the Romans, Crusades, and most particularly the Crusades, they did not want Jews, they did not want Muslims. But when Muslims ruled Palestine throughout history, and when Palestinians in modern history existed in Palestine, they've always welcomed others. There are, until today, Palestinian Jews, Palestinian Christians, and Palestinian Muslims, up until today. And in fact, a few hours ago, a Palestinian Christian community was bombed in Gaza. A church was bombed in Gaza after the Baptist hospital was bombed without any international, there was, of course, some condemnation, but without serious backlash. When Israel saw that they can bomb hospitals without any problem, Baptist hospitals, they are now bombing churches. They attacked the church and injured some Palestinian Christians. So it's not an issue of religion. Anti-Zionism is a totally different thing from anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism started as a problem in Europe. It did not start in Palestine or the Middle East in the first place. It's not our problem. It's their problem. They committed pogroms. They committed the Holocaust. We did not commit neither the pogrom nor the Holocaust. In fact, Israel is committing pogroms and Holocausts upon us. So the Palestinians, in fact, Palestinians respect people of other faiths, people of the book, be it Christians or Jews or followers of any other faith. However, anti-Zionism means you are advocating a movement that doesn't accept occupation, disposition, and oppression. Zionism is a defunct ideology that started in Europe more than a century ago. It emerged in Europe at the same time that Nazism and fascism were emerging. It emerged as a response, as a reflection of what was happening in Europe, a response to the persecution that some of the Jewish people were facing in Europe. And it eventually grew as a nationalist movement that has disregarded any ethical considerations. Zionism eventually has become a fuel for hate, for violence, for disposition and ethnic cleansing. The Zionism that we see in Israel now is worse than Nazism, is worse than fascism. In fact, every few years, there's a new version of, extremist Zionist ideology. If you are against Zionism, it doesn't necessarily mean you are against Jews. There are many Jews who are advocating a free Palestine, who are working against Zionism, who are criticizing Israel publicly. And honestly, I personally, and I believe all Palestinians share the same feeling, we have no issues with the Jews. It's up to anybody to worship or follow any faith, but don't come with weapons and an extremist ideology and take my land. I'll fight back.
You said at the beginning of our conversation that you see international response to the war in Gaza increasing now, that it's growing stronger. But I do wonder whether it's strong enough. So how are you expecting the international community to intervene, or if the international community can even intervene? And I'm looking specifically at the Muslim world. We have the Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim in Riyadh at the moment in Saudi Arabia attending an ASEAN Gulf Cooperation Council summit. And Palestine's going to be on the table, it's going to be discussed, but surely there can be more than just words. What do Palestinians expect from the international community and the Muslim brothers and sisters?
You see, I'm a student of international relations, so I see the world order in blocks or in umbrellas. There is now a bipolarity of power, or a multipolarity of some sort. Some countries are subject to America's hegemony. These countries, many of whom are sympathetic with the Palestinians, I expect them to start to voice out their disapproval to the American administration. And this is happening. This is the case of many of the Arab countries. Many of the Arab countries are practically under the American umbrella. You look at the countries of the Middle East, many Muslim and Arab countries in the Middle East are under the American umbrella. Many of them are voicing out their disapproval of the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Look at the Arab countries that refused the American proposal to absorb Palestinians from Gaza as refugees into their own countries. Many of these countries are asking for a humanitarian corridor. Many of these countries are asking the Americans to end the ongoing repression in Gaza because their people are so upset. There are millions now protesting all over the region in the streets of Jordan, Egypt, and elsewhere. On the other hand, there is another block of states and actors which are not restricted by the American hegemony. They are, in fact, resisting American hegemony. Russia and China, for instance, on the top level of this system, are resisting American hegemony in different regions and places. In the Middle East, there are several entities, several countries, several actors that are also resisting any American hegemony, which in the case of the Middle East is practically being implemented by the Israelis. So Israel is the proxy of the US in the Middle East. It's the American outpost in our region. Those who are resisting Israel are basically against such hegemonic imperialism. I expect the response of the first group of countries to pressure the Americans because they are practically on the American side. They have to keep voicing out their response against whatever policies they have to, and they are doing that. Many of the Muslim countries in this current time are in Jeddah meeting and are having different summits and meetings, voicing out their concerns, pushing the Americans to end the Israeli attack. On the other hand, those who are fighting American hegemony in the region, I expect them to be more involved in this struggle against Israel's genocide. And this is happening. Look at South Lebanon, for instance, the Palestinian and Lebanese resistance is doing something. Today, the Yemeni government has also issued warnings to the Israeli side. There are, of course, major protests taking place in Iraq and elsewhere, which are calling for a more, concrete measure. So both ways, throughout the last few days, there is a mounting pressure on Israel, whether from its ally, the U.S., because of the ongoing responses, or from its opponents.
Do Palestinians expect a solution or peace to come from outside, externally, from the international community? Are Palestinians waiting for the international community to step in and stop the violence?
If Palestinians were wholly reliant on the international community, the 7th of October wouldn't have happened. The Palestinians are realizing that they have to take action. Then the international community will come in. Of course, they have to build a strong network of friends and allies all over the world. But relying on external support alone isn't enough. We have to do it ourselves. We have to dismantle Israel's apartheid ourselves. This is what the Palestinians in Gaza are doing. This is what the Palestinians in the West Bank are doing. This is what the Palestinians inside Israel are doing. The protests, the rallies, the resistance, the self-reliance, the building up of resistance capabilities, this is all a sign that the Palestinians are not sitting on a couch and waiting. No, we are, as Palestinians, working very hard to liberate ourselves. If the international community wants to join us, we highly welcome them. But it's something that we learned from the South Africans, from the Algerians, from the Vietnamese, from every other nation. In fact, even from the Americans who liberated their country from the British colonial rule. If you want freedom, you have to do something, and we are doing something, but the odds are against us. We are faced by a very stark difference in the balance of power. The Israelis are aided by the Americans directly and literally. They receive $3.8 billion of military aid a year. The Americans, after the start of action in Gaza, sent their warships. They are promising Israel to send 2,000 of their troops. They are sending their fighter jets. Germany sent drones. France is sending intelligence support. Britain, the prime minister, is even in Israel right now. So the Palestinians find themselves facing the whole world. Will that break us? I doubt it.
what are you going to be paying attention to next to see how this will unfold? You know, either from within Gaza or from the response of the rest of the world, Muslim?
From within Gaza, the society is resilient. People, of course, are paying a heavy price for the Israeli attack. They're losing thousands of civilians. However, the people in Gaza have for 2 decades been building up their strength on all levels, on the economic, social, political, military, and other levels, to actually not only liberate Gaza, but also help in the liberation of Palestine. You see, the last military encounter with Israel in 2021 was linked to Jerusalem. It was called by Palestinians Saif al-Quds, the Sword of Jerusalem. This current military operation that happened on the 7th of October, it was also named as Tufan al-Aqsa, al-Aqsa flood or al-Aqsa torrent. The capabilities that Palestinians build in Gaza is to actually liberate Jerusalem and to liberate the rest of Palestine. And the same applies to Palestinians elsewhere in Nablus and Jenin and Hebron and elsewhere. So when it comes to the Palestinians, they are actually trying to get total freedom. They are trying to build whatever capabilities they can. But we say in Arabic, one hand doesn't clap alone. We need the international support. We need the international community to come in. We need our friends around the world. Just like we saw the Americans coming in with all possible capabilities to help Israel, we want the international community to come in and help us, not necessarily by sending troops, but there are a million other ways to help the Palestinians. We have to actually, try some of these options.
Muslim, thank you so much for being on the show today. Dr. Muslim Imran there, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.